Welcome to the 85th Monkey on My Back podcast. Contact us at momcast@gmail.com and find further reading at momcomics.com. This week on the pod, we stand around our spinning orders, ambush the no news, and in the spotlight, it's Jane with Matt Fraction's Casanova. Momcast, the comic book podcast that was bottle fed until it was 21. Oh yeah, I don't think anyone's ever said 85 quite that way before.
85th, no, I don't think so.
85th, the way I said it.
You sound very common.
Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm Jane.
So am I.
You're not, though. You're James, though, aren't you?
Yeah,
James.
No, but you only have to move a couple of letters.
And I'm Nick. Hello.
Nick.
While I was doing that, these two were laughing at somebody's pants.
They're very nice pants. I'm trying to work out where they come from. Are they a brand, or...?
They come from round somebody's bottom and private parts.
I think it's the thought of the private parts that... Well, we've started on a high note.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. What have you been doing this week, James?
What have I been doing this week? I don't really know.
Jane, what have you been doing this week?
This week, I have been doing things.
I don't know about you, I haven't really thought about it.
You two are such great
I didn't expect...
Well, free.
I didn't expect Nick to ask.
No, neither did I. What have I done?
Chips.
Chips, oh.
Did you eat chips?
We almost killed ourselves with chips.
Yeah.
You actually almost killed yourself.
I'm not... Yeah. Really?
Nicola and Jane proved that it's always a bad idea to befriend the chip shop server.
She was lovely.
Yeah,
really,
but she tried
us.
To fucking kill us with kindness last night.
That was a small chips, which was probably, if you think of about a whole oven bag of chips, big oven bag of chips, that was a small chips.
Oh, I don't know, a medium-sized bag of oven chips. But certainly they're a huge quantity of chips.
Oh yeah, you can get bigger than that.
Well, to be fair, we could have had one small chips and it would have probably served all three of us.
Yeah.
I had to leave chips.
Yeah.
I never leave food on my plate.
And you got the chip sweats, which was quite amusing.
I didn't think
you got the chip sweats.
Yeah.
I thought you were just standing too close to me and I got all sweaty and unnecessary.
No. I made a diamond bolognese. You're only really interested in chips, aren't you? I made a diamond bolognese earlier on in the week.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that cut your mouth?
Hmm?
Wouldn't that cut your mouth?
I meant a really good one.
And I'm not sure diamonds hold sauce very well.
What else have you been doing?
What else have I been doing? I've been struggling to get through June.
No, that's still going, is it?
I'm taking it away with me. I've told Nicola we're not coming back from holiday till I've finished it.
I refuse. I don't think she'll disagree with you.
No, nor do I. I've been nursing our poorly baby.
Aww.
Not as much as Nicola.
Nicola's been nursing her.
She has, yeah. She's much better at it than I am.
You mean nursing as in... behaving like a
nurse. Oh, she's poorly, yeah. Her. I don't mean... I've not been feeding her from my man nips. I haven't really done very much at all, actually. What a boring life I lead.
Jane? You've just been doing stuff. You did the chips thing already.
Yeah. I played Grand Theft Auto... There.
You did what?
Played Grand Theft Auto 4.
That's a good game.
Yes, a lot on Sunday, I think it was. And then got stuck in a mission and dropped out and threw the controller.
Have you been taking it online?
No.
It can be quite fun online, that game. It's bizarre.
I need to get better at driving. I do stress my boyfriend out a little bit because he gets very twitchy about the way I drive in games. And I say to him, that's not how I drive in real life.
Do you not? Does he not get twitchy about the fact that you're throwing his controllers around all over the place?
Well, I just threw it on a cushion, so
okay.
That's some pretty low wattage stropping.
Yeah,
out there.
Well, I'm not going to damage it. That's just ridiculous. Anyways, because I really trash my cars, and he gets funny about it. I'm like, well, I'm just going to steal another one.
It's Grand Theft Auto. I am a lousy backseat driver on Angry Birds. I discovered in the week.
A lousy
so,
one.
Well, yeah, it's I don't. It's such a simple game, and the physics are so intuitive that it confuses me. That apparently my wife has no idea of computer game engineering. How engineering works in computer games.
No way.
that, or how foundations work or anything like that. Okay. That if you knock out something at the bottom,
yeah,
it will have a greater impact on the top. She just doesn't understand.
I danced around the garden celebrating Southampton's promotion to the championship.
In the naked?
No, naked. And I also, my nephew taught me how to use the force.
Did he?
Yeah.
Not use the force.
Would you like me to show you how you use
really
the force?
It's really good, yeah.
Okay, so you need to get a bit closer. What he does, he licks his hand like so. Mm-hmm. And then he goes like that.
And he pushes you back.
And you moved before I touched you with
only
my...
just, though. I wondered what was going to happen. My reactions are quite slow, so...
I'm quite new at using the force, but you see that my licky hand, where I push it close to you, it makes you recoil, and he delighted me by doing that on Sunday.
I'm hoping next time...
See, I used the force on James.
Having eaten dinner with you a couple of times, I'm hoping that next time he could teach you how to use the fork. Because you're just sticking your face in the food.
I do.
It's really not working for me.
Works for me. I'm really heavy.
It's okay with donuts and with chips and stuff like that. Not so good with beef tacos.
Can you stop talking about chips?
You're sticking your face fully in beef tacos. Seems a little bit much.
I actually feel like I tell you what, the battered sausages were delicious. Although watching Jane eat her giant battered sausage was one of the most hilarious things I've seen recently.
The funny thing is, I think he was oblivious to what I was doing, but then he did something really similar straight afterwards.
Sorry. I'll listen back. It's fine. Sorry. I was just thinking about the giant bat and sausage Jane wielding around like some sort of fleshy weapon yesterday.
You know how when we started doing the podcast, I was quite resistant.
It's a long time ago, I can barely remember.
I was quite resistant to, not to doing the podcast, but to getting too involved in the whole geeky side of, because I knew what I was like, and I knew that if I allowed myself to get too geeky,
yeah,
then I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
This week, alongside the present I was making for my wife, which took up a stupid amount of time and has really tired me out.
But it's lovely though, the results are going to be great.
I bought a copy of Medieval Total War 2. A game,
I love Total War.
A game that I already have, but not in a proper copy. So I bought a copy of that solely so I could try out the Third Age Lord of the Rings modification that I remember reading about in Rock Paper Shotgun ages ago. Not even that into Lord of the Rings, but it intrigued me for some reason.
The last one I played is Rome. Is it better than Rome?
Medieval Total War 2 is kind of a bit better, I think.
Okay.
But Shogun Total War 2.
Shogun's the first one I played. I can't remember ever being so addicted to a game as I was.
I love it. I've been playing a bit of Empire Total War because I knew I was going to be getting Shogun Total War 2 to this week. Wow. And I haven't had a chance to play Shogun Total War 2 yet, but I got it.
That is one of those games where you do generally, you lose days.
Yeah.
Whole days.
So I've been playing lots of Total War, but the ridiculous thing is I spent money so that I could try out the Lord of the Rings mod.
Cool.
And I also, in a slightly side geeky sort of way, bought a thing on Steam that's called Universe Sandbox, which is great. You have solar systems, and I think you can create your own. You have solar systems, and you get to see what happens if you slightly change the gravity of things.
Oh, wow.
You see all the things orbiting each other. Mm. So you can change the Earth so that it is as dense as the Sun and stuff, so it has the density and mass, and all the orbits spin. It's all a bit bizarre. And that's not so geeky as nerdy, so much geeky as nerdy. Although I don't really understand what's going on in that, but anyway, that's besides the point. But I spent a chunk of the last 2 days discussing on the internet the relative merits and problems with a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And then I spent a big chunk of the day discussing the relative merits of a comic on the internet. And I don't normally do that much. But I ended up having a discussion with people about Brian Michael Bendis and Die Hard fans and stuff like that, which is further out than I normally stay. It feels like I've been a real geek this week.
Yeah, that's why I've been avoiding the internet.
Because I've been on there.
No, it's not why I've been avoiding the internet.
You've been really horrible to me today.
Sorry. I've not been on the internet because I've not been in a very good mood, and I choose to disengage with the internet when I'm in a bad mood.
I thought it all seemed a bit lighter and fluffier.
Hey, I keep it light and fluffy when I'm on the internet. I choose to go and hide in my little analogue corner and weep. I de-digitise when I'm moody.
You go and sit in a corner and weep.
a little wooden clockwork corner.
You're funny.
Yeah.
Should we talk about comics?
Yeah, I'm a steampunk depressive.
You're a steampunk depressive.
Oh, and James was making up emo songs this morning. Yes. That was really delightful on the way to work.
Yeah. Songs about emu.
We worked out on the way to work this morning that all you need to do to be able to write really good emo songs is just have a long list of words that rhyme with me.
That works.
You came up with a really good song.
Thank you. I wish I'd written it down. It was excellent, wasn't it?
Could have sold that.
We could have.
Oh, we watched all of Friday Night Dinner.
Yeah,
we did. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Really, really good. I was a bit upset by how it all turned out, but that's besides the point.
I wish I had a large collection of New Scientist.
Yeah. We wouldn't understand any of it, though.
No, I used to have a subscription when I was young and precocious.
I used to work in a library right next to where my office was right next to where the New Scientists were, so I got into that. You con yourself after reading it regularly for a few weeks into thinking you actually do know what they're talking about, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing, it becomes easier with time, because it's like it's accessing, your brain starts ticking over and getting exercise, and then you stop. And you realise that you didn't actually understand most of it anyway.
I know, but I was getting it at an age where you'd think it would have inspired me to greater things. I was like 11 when I used to read it.
I wasn't getting it at 11.
Yeah, but it didn't inspire me to greater things.
You think getting it at 11 would have inspired you to greater things?
Yeah, like to be scientist.
Like maybe a threesome by 15 or 16.
And who's to say that I didn't achieve that aim, Nick?
I'm just guessing.
Yeah, you're guessing right.
Should we talk about comics?
No, I want to think about missed opportunities. No, actually, my life turned out very well as far as that particular subject's concerned.
Hmm.
I had threesomes all the time then. Please don't tell my wife. Hey! Mm-hmm. Every week, don't forget to tip your waitress.
Do you ever talk to her while having sex?
I try very hard not to. I find it breaks my concentration.
Yeah, getting the phone. Ringing her.
I'm having a really good time, darling. Can hit the baby in the back. Okay, shall we talk about comics?
Well, you get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, sorry, Nick. It's partially true, as you well know.
Something about the comics. Yes. I got to the comic shop before they had any comics sorted. Yeah, which sucked.
Foolish.
So I missed Green
Wake,
which sucks.
I've missed issue 2 of Butcher Baker, The Righteous Maker. They've sold out.
That was ages ago.
I know, but I haven't been very consistent at the comic book shop, so I've missed that. It is on my standing order now, though. I picked up 4 books, and I'm going to talk about all of them. No, I won't. I'll talk about all of them briefly, because I'm lazy. First one that came out a couple of weeks ago is issue 2 of Sigil.
You like the first one?
Yeah, I did. Mike Carey, which, as I've noted to a couple of people, got going really quickly. Obviously, Mike Carey has a bit of a reputation for his stories being a bit slow-burning. Sigil started very quickly. Obviously, if you remember back to my excellent review of issue 1, it's about a young girl that finds herself bestowed with mystical powers when the cross-gen symbol on her chest awakens, and she's transported into a sort of pirate ship. They've tried to invoke her because they thought they were getting an older version of her.
Oh.
But she didn't. And this basically picks up with her on the pirate ship. It's a really good, fun, swashbuckling, time-shifting romp.
Hmm.
That I think, actually, out of all the books I read at the moment, might be my favourite all-ages book.
Yeah, cool.
It's really, I want to say light, and that feels like it does it a disservice, but
there's nothing wrong with things being fun.
Yeah, but it is. It's just really, it's a really good fun adventure romp.
Mm.
Which, and I was talking to our friend James at the comic book shop about, oh, it's one of those books. I sort of got the first one. It's one of those books that I feel like I don't know if I want to put it on my standing order, but I know I'll pick it up when it's out. And I think that second issue kind of makes me want to put it on my standing order. It's just really enjoyable knockabout fun. The pacing in both the art and the dialogue is just bang on. It's really well composed art as well. Tells the story beautifully. Not my favourite style of art, particularly.
It's very crisp. It's Leonard Kirk drawing.
But it's really well composed and really well composed book. I use composed twice in that sentence.
Congratulations.
I will purge myself afterwards. But that's very good. I enjoy it.
Nice cover and everything. It's nice.
It's one of those sort of books that I'd sort of quite like to share with you. I quite often talk about my nephews wanting to get them into the older one. Is the sort of book that if I wasn't terrified he'd rip it to pieces, I'd share with the older one. It's a good book. The next book is Blue Estate number 2, which I spoke about last time. It's one of the group of Image books that I got out that blew my brains out, with an intensely sexy cover.
It is, but the first one was quite sexy as well.
It was, yeah, and it's got a very sharp noir feel to it.
This is one of the books you covered in your feature on the site.
It was, yeah, my very accurate feature on the site about Image being good now. I don't know, it might be more insightful on the site, it might not. If you go and have a look, you'll find out. you can leave a comment on there and tell me I'm wrong.
Say Image is gooder.
Yeah, I like Image now, it's done good.
There used to be all this spider spawn bloke in there.
Yeah, I didn't like it. It was all very one note superhero-y bollocks, but now I do think it's done good.
No, it was poo, but now it's not poo. Yeah, it's less good poo.
It's like flowers now. It was poo, now it's flowers.
I don't think we need anyone to guess next week. I can do James really easily. I'll do his bit. Yeah.
Oh, you can do me really easily. All you've got to do is say the word, darling. This is the second part of the Rachel situation, which, as you remember, was our geeky gumshoe has been engaged to help a fading star have a mess-free divorce from his wife, Rachel.
It's never mess-free, though, is
it? Who knows too much?
Love, it's never mess-free.
No, in this issue we find out a little more about Rachel and some of the characters that circle around her and her husband. The art is outstanding, really moody.
Yeah, it's gorgeous art.
Yeah.
I was a bit down on it in the first issue, and that's why I didn't buy it, but am I going to regret that now?
I think so, I really dig it, I really like it, really moody. It's the colouring that makes it, I think, without a shadow of doubt. Paul's the same trick very much as, I forget the book you were talking about last week, that's essentially monochrome, and it's kind of washed in a single colour, and the colour dictates the mood of the scene.
This
book, more than any other, I hear the voice of the characters coming through ringing loud and clear in my voice, which is really strange. I kind of made a mental note to remember it while I was reading it. I can't think of another book I read at the moment where the voices, the accents and the vocal nuances of the way the people talk in it, really clear to me. I don't know, it could well have been the mood of the reader at the time. But
Victor Kalvachev.
Yeah, I can't think of another book that has such clear voices in it. It's really well written, really slick book. Very adult, though, compared to Sigil.
It's actually not him writing, is it? It's Andrew Osborne writing from a story by Victor Kalvachev. Ah, okay.
Really sort of intriguing. As I say, still very sort of Mickey Splaine, Mike Hammer kind of feel to it, but in a very contemporary, cool setting.
It looks really nice.
It is. It's a beautiful book, and it's again just very well put together comic book.
It being called the Rachel, blimey, that was a loud motorbike.
It was a loud.
It
motorbike.
Being called the Rachel situation makes me think of the film The Rachel Papers.
Okay.
Which starred Dexter Fletcher and Iona Skye, and was much more sexy than I was expecting
Dexter
it to be
Fletcher.
When I first watched it. There was a lot of sexy times in that film.
I think Dexter Fletcher's name.
I think of two things when I think of Dexter Fletcher. I think of Press Gang, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think of the film that I can't remember what it was called, where he has sex with a girl and then his girlfriend comes back and she goes, "You smell of sex." And that's all I can remember.
That might have been Rachel Papers.
It's possible, but that's all I can remember about that film.
Ad rocks down with the Ione.
Yeah,
he was talking about Ione Skye. Yeah. She's married to Beastie Boy.
Is she?
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
One of them.
Okay.
The sexy one. Ad rock. Ad rocks down with the Ione.
Wicked.
Listen to this shit, because both of them is bony. Got to do it like this, like Chachi and Joni. Because he's the cheese, she's the cheese, and I'm the macaroni. That's the lyric.
Copyright Beastie Boys. Or
copyright Beastie Boys. Other New York rap acts
are available.
Yeah.
The last two books I'm going to talk about are both by Garth Ennis. The Boys.
You like The Boys?
I love The Boys.
Yay!
He's very much back on track after, I think, the events around Highland Laddie and the last arc left a few people slightly nonplussed. This particular arc is really about how The Boys came to be, how they came to be spawned from the CIA, what the origins of Voight American, who are the conglomerate that control the superheroes.
And are arseholes.
And are arseholes, yeah. And are now sort of trying to control the government as well.
Who are arseholes.
Extension, who are arseholes too. But this is really backstory for the boys. It is one of those Ennis books where, at the beginning of it, you know Garth Ennis has decided that this particular character has got a lot to say.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, does this guy have an awful lot to say? I forget the dude's name, embarrassingly, but it's essentially the guy that created The Boys that recruited Butcher.
Oh, right, yeah.
I forget the dude's name.
Is it the little dude?
No, it's not a little dude, although the little dude features in it.
All right.
But yeah, it's basically 22 pages of exposition. But
is it good?
Yeah, it's beautifully written.
Who's drawing that at the moment?
It's still John McCrae.
Do you know, I don't think I'd even realised. I think I'd forgotten he was drawing it.
John McCrae. It was Russ Braun previously on The Boys.
And prior to that it was...
Darrett Robinson. Yeah. And both Braun and McCrae are kind of drawing in the style of... Although, I mean, this is more obviously McCrae than...
Can I have
previously. It's a great book. There's some very interesting subtext. I mean, obviously... Very much like, it kind of reminds me of Preacher and maybe some other Ennis stories that start off relatively light-heartedly.
Mm.
And Hitman, you were talking about last week,
yeah.
It starts off quite light, and then as Ennis gets into the story, then he starts, his agenda for the story basically kicks in, and there's masses of political subtext, where I think The Boys at the beginning was very much a sort of parody of superhero types. And superhero characters, almost like a sort of more jocular Watchman, I guess, to start. It's getting very serious. There's some very heavy political subtext in there as well. I mean, Voight American is obviously an avatar for huge, uncontrollable, multinational conglomerates. So
I don't think Garth Ennis can help getting to that point in his work. No, it's always there, isn't it?
He does it with aplomb, you know. He's got a very steady hand when it comes to that sort of thing.
He does it with aplomb.
He does it with aplomb. That's he's like a, you know, like when you have exams, you have a gonk on your desk. His gonk, his writing gonk, is a plum.
A plum.
He does it with aplomb.
What else?
And the last one, Garth Ennis again. It's issue 3 of Jennifer Blood, which is still awesome. We're learning more about Jennifer's character now. There is a fantastically gruesome hit that she carries out in it. We're finding a little more about how she came to be where she is.
Yeah.
And, or what she was before she became this suburban housewife.
Indicates that in the end of the second issue.
It does, absolutely. Yeah. We find out a little bit more about it in this issue, and it's still awesome.
It's a bit of a sexy cover.
Yeah.
It's a very sexy cover. Although it's a little bit, you know, you go on about how you hate photo reference. It's kind of a little bit.
I don't go on about how I don't mind photo reference. It's just if it's good.
Yeah, I'm
that's all right. I like that.
I like
Tim Bradstreet. Tim Bradstreet's a master at this.
Yeah, it is. It's good. It's good. But I, you know,
I can't complain about photo reference. That's basically all I fucking do when I draw. Yeah.
I know that's a not particularly competent micro review of Jennifer Blood, but you know, it's essentially, you know, we're finding out about her. There's an awesome hit.
There's not she can say about giving away.
No,
that's
very true. But it's very much sort of, it's kind of sort of Punisher War Diary with a girl, with a lady.
Is the sort of diary narrative still running through?
Oh, good, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I really like that. It's a really good way of getting Jennifer's character across. And
yeah, absolutely.
You've got the contrast of what she's saying on the outside, and when you look at the panels, and then what's really going on.
Yeah, totally. It's a really cool device for sort of, you know, allowing her to express her inner monologue, internal monologue. Sorry, it's very cool. It's still the Momisher, which is awesome.
The Momisher.
Momisher.
Yeah.
That's quite a good way of putting it. You've called it that before, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, I'm going to keep calling it that until everyone calls it the Momisher. And Garth Ennis is forced to change the name of the book to the Momisher.
Well, Drawfer's stuck.
It has, yeah. I'm going to start charging people 5p every time they use that name.
It was always a lost leader, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I knew that was going to happen. Shall I talk about comics?
Yes, please, I'm done.
I got 2 weeks' worth of 2000 AD.
I got 2 weeks' worth of 2000 AD.
It's a bit of a weird experience for me at the moment, 2000 AD, because there are two stories, as of this week, There are two stories. No, as of last week, actually, there are two stories that I'm not reading. I'm not reading as they come out. I'm waiting until they're finished.
All right.
Because last week, I believe it's the last stretch of Nicolai Dante started.
Yes.
And I'm going to wait until that's finished, because it's not one of my favourites anyway. And Red Seas as well. Although I quite enjoyed the first couple of parts, I'm waiting until there's a bit more of it to read.
So that actually, Kehar touched on it in his piece about Red Seas the other day, and I felt to say, the last run of Red Sea, I kind of left me a little bit nonplussed, but this current run of Red Sea, I'm
just really good.
Loving it. Mm. Yeah,
I really like the first two parts, and there's an interesting Judge Dredd story that started last week and continued this week called California Babylon, that's about something that's going on in the remains of Mega City 2.
Right.
I think, which is quite good. I'm enjoying that. Flesh, I don't know how to feel about Flesh. There are quite often, I'm getting used to the art now, so I'm enjoying it a little bit more, but I'm still not sure about it.
I'm not sure I dig the story personally.
Pat Mills is very good at banging a particular sort of drum. I'm not necessarily sure it's it seems to be very, it's quite often there's lots of political, he creates quite a dense political universe in everything he does, and that's fine, but I just think that maybe I'm not, it might be aimed at younger people than me.
Yeah.
I get a bit irritated with it. But a new story started this week by, who was it? By, I think, Gordon Rennie and someone called Tiernan Trevelyan, called Absalom. I think it was called Absalom or Harry Absalom or hang on, because it's weird. They put the thing at the back. They actually put their title at the back,
wow,
which is strange because they don't normally do that. It's called Absalom, and it's this really peculiar sort of noir-esque thing about this crotchety old, cancer-ridden police inspector or police detective it's kind of got a gothic-y element to it. It's set in contemporary England, I think, but. And it's uncertain right now whether it's going to turn out to be supernatural or what exactly it's going to be. But he's quite a crotchety old bastard. Reminds me a little bit of Stickleback, and of Dirty Frank as well.
Mm-hmm.
When he's in it. But Tin and Trevelyan's art's really nice. It kind of reminds me a little bit of a bunch of some of the better black and white artists who've come out of in the last few years. Really, really good. Interesting to see where that goes, and I'm going to be keeping track of it. Absalom himself is a bit of an asshole, and I don't know if necessarily I'm going to find him that interesting, but it'll certainly be interesting to see what happens. Gordon Rennie's got quite an interesting, unusual voice as well, and when he turns up, he's normally worth the price of entry.
I see so bursting full of thrill power was 2008 last week. It actually went onto the back page.
I know, that was bizarre.
Which never happens.
One thing about Nicolai Dante is I'm not necessarily that interested in the macro story of it. I'm not that interested in it. It's basically world building, and I'm not that interested in the world they've built. But Simon Fraser's art is just amazing. Always has been. And it just gets better and better on here. It's really nice to see him in it again. And it does burst through onto the back cover. And I like the way he draws ladies and men.
Oh. You seem confused. Adam,
he draws ladies I'd like to be with and men I'd like to be and oh, be man. With. So, and the other book that came out this week was Moon Knight by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev. This is what prompted me to end up talking to a couple of people on Twitter about it. Max Barnard. And I talked a little bit about it, and then I was talking to someone else about it, who was saying that the Bendis diehards are really not enjoying this. A lot of them seem to have not responded very well to it, to which I was a bit of an asshole in my response to that, which was that I was, on the one hand, I was perplexed or nonplussed by the idea of Bendis diehards, when for the last few years he hasn't really been showing that much. There's been a lot of fairly generic stuff coming out from him over the last few years at Marvel. Not really his fault. They've been offering him the job to write everything under the sun, and he has been, so of course it was going to end up being okay. But I like Bendis, Brian Michael Bendis's early, really early self-published, well, not self-published, but independent published noir stuff. So I'm used to him having quite an unusual voice, and so the fact that he's become part of the mainstream, I have to wonder if I'd necessarily be in tune with people who think of themselves as Brian Michael Bendis diehards. You see what I mean? And I sort of said, well, if they're not enjoying it, then maybe it's not such a bad thing. Sure. Made me think a little bit about conversations I've had about Nathan Barley, funnily enough. There was a really rabid fan base of Chris Morris's stuff on the Day to Day and Brass Eye and his older stuff on the radio, that when Nathan Barley came out, completely turned on him. Well, didn't turn on him, but turned on it and said it was awful and it was the worst thing ever and stuff. When I think it was one of those interesting things where a creator of something outgrows their fan base, really. They decide to do something completely different and it completely throws out the people who thought that the reason they liked it was because they like things that are really different, when actually they just like something that's a bit sort of...
But fanboy entitlement is always amusing, unless you're stuck in the middle of it, suffering from it yourself.
Yeah, that's true. What's interesting about this, I think Brian Michael Bendis does an interesting job. Moon Knight's a weird character who's had, like... There's a run on of comics about him in the, I think, early 80s. I don't really remember who wrote it. I didn't read it at the time, but I've seen lots of the art, because it was one of the first places where Bill Sienkiewicz, who's one of my favourite artists, really sort of started making his mark. And really, really doing stuff that was quite weird for comics, like really expressionistic artwork and stuff. And people keep trying to relaunch it over the years as kind of a noir, sort of noir, but it's this weird really weird car crash of noir-esque sort of street level vigilante stuff, and at the same time there's supernatural elements to it as well. He basically was a mercenary called Mark Spector who was left to die, it says at the top here, left to die outside an Egyptian temple. And he was... What did you do?
Jane's attempt to leave the room quietly just failed dramatically there, didn't they?
Get out! That's completely nonplussed me. He was resurrected by the ancient deity Khonshu. And it sort of speaks to him. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, at the top of this one, I haven't been following Moon Knight much over the last year. I don't really know what's been happening with it.
No, mate.
The way it describes him here is it says, left to die outside an Egyptian temple, mentally unstable mercenary Mark Spector believes himself to have been resurrected by the ancient deity Khonshu to be his supernatural avatar on Earth. When night falls, Spector dons the mantle of Khonshu and fights the darkness as Moon Knight.
Okay.
Which is interesting, because it's almost suggesting that the supernatural element to it doesn't really exist, which is something that I wasn't aware had happened. And the weird thing about it is, it feels to me like it doesn't read like anything that Brian Michael Bendis has written in the last few years. It doesn't actually read very much like anything else that Marvel are putting out at the moment, and I found it a little bit jarring reading it to begin with, because it's very playful in the first act of it. The writing's very playful in the first act and very deliberately OTT and like melodramatic, and then in the rest of it the writing's still got this really loose style. It still has a lot of Brian Michael Bendis's like people talking to each other, dialogue, like cracking off each other. Not actually cracking off each other, that sounds
that's
weird.
A very different, that's probably one of his old independent
yeah stories. But it's got a really loose style to it, like he's playing around with a new voice, and it doesn't always work exactly right. It doesn't always come off exactly right, but the fact that he's trying something new is really appealing, and it really feels like a kind of a shift in style from him, especially when he's still doing all of the other books the way he normally does. The interesting thing is Alex Maleev is doing the same thing in this book. Now... I think I read Spider-Woman, and I don't know if you did.
No, I didn't.
And a few of us have been reading Scarlet. I think all of us have been reading Scarlet. The Spider-Woman represented a point at which Alex Maleev's artwork, like, drifted all the way into photo reference, to the extent that it looked really flat, didn't really work very well. And there's still obviously an awful lot of photo reference on Scarlet, but it looks like a comic and it works like a comic, and everything kind of flows. In Moon Knight, he's gone straight back to line work, and it, on the one hand, it looks like he's moved back to the stuff he did on old runs of The Crow, and when he turned up in Batman way back in No Man's Land. It's got a really nice, it's still got his kind of composition, which is really strong, but it's also got a really nice line to it.
Very classic thing. Yeah.
But at the same time, he's really, and I think it's really deliberate, he's really channeling Bill Sienkiewicz back in the inking style is really similar to the stuff Bill Sienkiewicz was doing back in the 80s and early 90s, and I love that guy's work. And for me, this is kind of the potential that I always saw in Alex Maleev's stuff anyway. It's really, it's interesting that the inking style is, and the inking and the colouring, the colouring isn't by him.
Wow, it's completely different, isn't it?
Yeah, the colouring is by a guy called Matthew Wilson, colour artist, who I think probably lends an awful lot to it as well. But I always quite liked Alex Maleev's composition and his storytelling in the stuff he did years ago, and that's really coming to the front here. like Bendis's writing in it, it just seems to flow really nicely. It's like they're trying to freestyle a little bit. I wondered how they were going to do this with Bendis still writing all of the stuff he's writing, which I think he's still writing quite a lot of stuff, and he's writing the game now as well, I think, the Marvel Universe game, and Maleev doing Scarlet when they'd obviously had trouble doing Spider-Woman. And the way they're obviously doing it is Maleev's work's just a lot more loose in this, and it's lovely. There's a problem with the story, though, and it's not something that, with the comic, it's not something that Bendis or Maleev get to walk away from scot-free, because one of them did the cover. The image on the cover is one that's been trailing, they've been trailing everywhere, that's been available as a flyer and everything. It's a really nice cover. It utterly ruins one of the central plot points in the story.
Oh,
like,
no.
Utterly ruins it. And it's like, it feels like I'm spoiling it saying that, but there's a problem where there's a conceit in the book, and you see it coming a lot sooner than you should have, basically. It doesn't help that the beginning bit tells you that he's delusional either.
All right.
That kind of feels like I've said too much about it, but it was irritating. It was like a schoolboy. Well, I don't think it was an error on the part of Marvel. I think they probably thought, well, it's a cool image, let's do it, it represents the book. But it kind of could have been the second cover, and that wouldn't have been a problem. You know, so, anyway, that's Moon Knight. It's a good book, I like it. Not necessarily one for people who've grown to love Bendis's, like, stuff over the last few years, because it is quite different, but I really liked it. And it's interesting to see them doing something new. It is a $3.99 book, which I just noticed. So, maybe not that great an option to take a punt on, but it's okay. I liked it.
Good.
Alex Maleev's work is lovely in it as well, and Matthew Wilson's artwork's beautiful.
Thanks, Nick.
The sun is right in my eyes.
I'm sorry. Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
Okay, time to talk about something relatively normal for a change. Avengers Academy, to be precise, and Avengers Academy issue 13 by Christos Gage and Sean Chen, to be preciser. If you've never read or heard about Avengers Academy before, and if you haven't, well, you should have. Anyway, if you've never heard or read this series before, Avengers Academy follows a group of troubled teenagers as they learn how to be heroes against the odds, and the despite themselves. For the first year of life, this series has been an amazing ride, bringing things to the table that I never would have expected from a Marvel book. And this issue is no different. See, it's prom time! And as we all know, that means romance, angst, and life lessons. And we totally get that. Except maybe that last one. But shut up, nothing's perfect! Anyway, the prom. We have the Young Allies, the Academy students, a bunch of Initiative alumni, and the Academy staff, all having a very traditional prom with a superpowered twist. One that continues threads from the giant-sized Avengers Academy that also came out this week that I haven't read yet because it's huge, and tying up or developing plots from the first of Academy storylines. And of course, all of this is pretty much in the very teen book style of romance, which I'm totally going to focus on. We have Hank Pym and Tigra finally seeing eye to eye on the love scale. Fuck am I saying? Reptile and Spider-Girl getting a bit more development. Firestar and Justice clearing the air so they can both continue to get on with their own love lives and such, and many, many more. I don't really want to spoil because otherwise I'm just telling you about the whole issue. This basically pairs off everyone in various lovely ways, leaving so many options as to what Gage will explore in future storylines. And Gage is on fire here. Not a single beat feels unnecessary or cheesy, and they all grab you by the heart and pump all the blood out so you'll die. 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 That is to say that they pull at your heartstrings, and it's lovely. And there's nice hidden details too, like hard-born Komodo scrapping, making up, and making out in the background of a four-panel sequence, all lovingly rendered by Sean Chen, who overall does a pretty great job on this issue. See, Sean Chen is someone who tends to either be great or pretty flawed issue to issue, and it's always a nice surprise to see him crack out something as immersive and beautiful as what we've got here. It's a total treat that makes me look forward to him coming back on the title for the point one issue, redundant though they are, in the short future. Anyway, all in all, good issue, great series, licky licky. Nice. So, I'm off to wash all this fanboy glee off of me now, and so shall speak to you all again next week, when I might have something less typical to talk about. No.
Are you okay, Jane?
Yeah.
You had a bit of a mishap.
A door on a bookcase.
I hope that's the only mishap you had. I hope you didn't have a mishap when he reached the toilet.
No, I was fine.
Good.
I had I don't know if the picture made it onto Twitter, but I had this unnerving experience when I went into the I think of it as my toilet, but obviously it's a toilet that our office shares with a bunch of other officers on the floor. And I went into my cubicle, which is the cubicle I always use because I don't know if I've got a shy bladder, so I have to go in the cubicle.
We have your urinals in our new
one. And I like to sometimes have a comfort wee. So, you know, sit down and have a comfort wee.
Pardon?
A luxury wee.
Luxury wee, comfort wee, whatever. You know, it's a luxury wee.
Reassessing you.
It's where you sit down to wee, so you don't have to stand up.
Yeah, I know.
And you can have a bit of a read or a think.
I don't like to think too much.
It's like a micro... It's essentially the micro... The think you'd get from having a really small poo.
I don't think when I'm pooing. I play my iPhone.
Well, that'll do.
Read 2000 AD.
But anyway, so I went in, looked at the cubicle. Someone had, you know how in like on TV programs and stuff, sometimes people are a bit like neurotic and put toilet paper around the thing.
Yeah.
Someone had put half a roll around. I mean, they'd done a really sort of tidy, almost tidy job of it, but literally about 100 sheets of paper around.
They knew it was your cubicle.
I guess they must have done, but it was a little bit weird to see. I didn't really like that. Anyway, news ambush.
Thanks for sharing that. it's another one of those, isn't it, where I think we probably start with sad news first.
Aww. Oh, gosh. That's passed me by, I think.
Hollywood star Jackie Cooper, who is probably best known to geeks as Perry White in the four Superman movies.
Oh, they are.
Starring Christopher Reeve, passed away at the age of 88, which is very sad.
That is very sad.
That's sad.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about my issues with those Superman movies, although... I still think spending less than £23 million on a bit part player in the first movie would have probably served them better, maybe investing some of that money in special effects that would have lasted the test of time.
None of them last the test of time. Don't be such a nice... Just because you suckle at the teat of George Lucas, who has been secretly reworking his film
How about 2001, A Space Odyssey, whose special effects still hold up extremely well?
To be fair, though, to 2001, not an awful lot happens in any of the special effects sequences.
Okay,
most of them are mechanical.
How about actually something fair that's based on the... something like the Poseidon Adventure. Special effects
mostly
are still...
mechanical and set-based. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a film that involved someone flying that has stood the test of time.
The flying works just fine.
What are you thinking
of? I'm thinking of specifically towards the end of the first Superman movie when the dam breaks. I'm completely taken out of the movie at that point.
Are you?
It's just... I just sit around and say, oh shit, Toy Town's been flooded. Someone have to remake their model train set.
Can any of our listeners remember which parody of Titanic it was where they really took
French
the piss?
And French and Saunders.
Was it the French and Saunders? Where there's the massive CGI...
Why don't you ask the people in the room who know?
Did you know I didn't realise... Because I couldn't find evidence of it online. Inexplicably.
It's one of my brother's favourite French and Saunders sketch. I've seen that many times.
The CGI, the bit where the CGI ship... is like where they're doing the rolling around and they're joking that you're obviously really impressed with the effect, but it just looks a bit naff. Was my experience of Thor last night. Thor got released this week.
Yes, I hear. Jackie Cooper would be much
better. Jackie Cooper. Mm.
In another shit obit on the Momcast.
No, I think you segued nicely into complaining about big blockbustery films that aren't going to stand the test of time.
That's true. I've got more news. Do you want more news?
Yeah, go on.
The cover image for the Star Wars Blu-ray release has been shared with the world today.
Oh, right.
And I just want to join in the chorus of disapproval. It's fucking shit.
Is it?
Yeah, do you want to see it?
Are you going to buy it anyway, though, James?
No, I'm not going to buy the Blu-rays of Star Wars. Lucas has had enough of my money. Until the Blu-ray...
That is a bit of a sucker.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
And hang on, what the hell is that?
Until the Blu-ray is released that allows me to watch the original trilogy without the finagling of the special edition around it, or at the very least, we don't have to see Guido shooting first. Until we get that, and I don't really want to buy it on Blu-ray, I've bought it in enough formats over the years.
That is so rubbish.
It's not very good, is it? It's the, if you've not seen it, it's the Tatooine homestead with... Anakin Skywalker as a child walking towards the viewer, and a sort of spectral version of Luke Skywalker.
Is it Luke Skywalker or is it Anakin?
It's Luke Skywalker.
As an old person.
It's Luke Skywalker walking towards the homestead with his back to the viewer.
So conceptually it doesn't make any sense either.
Well, not his father and son.
Well, yeah, but one's walking towards... Why is Luke Skywalker a ghost and walking away?
I don't understand why Luke Skywalker's walking towards the homestead. It makes no sense to me at all.
It's also not a very good retread of one of the few really good artistic things that came out of Episode 1, which was that first teaser poster, which was lovely, the little one of Anakin Skywalker with his shadow.
The individual covers of the original... trilogy and the prequel are pretty cool though. The first one for the original trilogy is essentially a montage, isn't it? Of it's got Darth Vader as the main image, and then various other images behind it. And then the prequel trilogy has again is a montage piece, and it has Yoda as the main image with various shit characters from that piss poor. Trilogy of films.
If we had a series of pictures of us and the various people that we know at like conventions and stuff showing up, would that be a montage?
It would be a montage.
Excellent. Was there any other news that wasn't anything to do with George Lucas?
Shall I have a look? Do you want me to check Bleeding Cool? Nothing that's sparked my ire in quite in the same way as that has.
That's irritating, though.
Yeah,
but then I, do you know, it's I find.
Apparently, Thor came out, and according to our site, it's awesome.
I have to admit that I was a bit perplexed while watching it. That I get the feeling the cut that they use in the 3D version is different, because if Natalie Portman runs. In the version I saw, it certainly, bless you, certainly didn't last as long as it seemed to for John. It seems to have happened in slow motion forever.
I get the impression, if you've seen the review on our site, there's going to be a counterpoint going up soon.
I don't think so. I don't have the energy.
Right.
I hit a point. I hit a point today. I realised that the point at which there's a point at which I care enough to review something, and there's a point at which I care too much, and it's going to be too tiring for me to try and get everything I think about something in.
Especially when it's not you'll probably say it's not. When it's the opinion's negative, it gets a bit wearing.
Yeah.
I like to avoid doing that sort of thing.
There is, my personal opinion and thought is, there is enough really good stuff in it that it makes it disappointing that it isn't a better film.
Fair enough.
It's either a crap film with great bits in, or a good film that should have been better.
I suspect I'll enjoy it.
Oh, you'll enjoy it. We enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There's enough slapstick and, like, stuff. Idris Elba is amazing. Kat Dennings is gorgeous. That guy who was in Mamma Mia, who was the slightly foreign one.
I haven't seen Mamma Mia. You're looking at me like I've seen Mamma Mia.
Well, you're a girl.
With taste.
Sarsgaard. Thingy Sarsgaard. Somebody Sarsgaard. No, shut up.
Clive Owen.
He's really good in it. Everyone's really good. Everyone's
Jared Butler.
Everyone, like, kind of works their part, but it's just a bit. There are bits of it that are too weak.
That reminds me. I don't know why it reminds me. Clive Owen sounds a little bit like What's His Face Owen, who's one of the characters in Last of the Summer.
Wilfred Owen.
No. You remember we've alluded to Last of the Summer Wine before in the podcast. And I was sat in the car while Nicola was paying for some fuel at the weekend. And three older, slightly drunk-looking guys came out of the petrol station, and there was a tall, posher-looking one had a military-style jacket on. And there was a shorter, scruffy-looking one. And then there was a one that was neither too neat nor scruffy in the middle. And they look for all the world like a really depressing image of, if the Last of the Summer Wine guys were real and they lived in Southampton, that's what they'd be. They'd just be three really dodgy looking pissed old dudes.
Definitely.
I felt quite depressed.
I find it interesting that Compo managed to exist so far away from any sign of a benefits office.
Yeah, I know. Touched on in Last of the Summer Wine. There's a really cool dark version of someone waiting to be written.
He was really, really, did work really hard, had a really good pension, and just decided he wanted to do whatever he wanted.
Maybe. Although they did a first of the Summer Wine series, and he was a pretty scruffy bastard.
He was a wastrel in that,
You know how if you were sat watching someone, probably someone who had a bit too much to drink, building a house of cards?
Yes.
And, like, they managed to get a few layers up. And the first few times you'd think, actually, every time they manage to place something, it's really impressive.
Yeah.
And then they cough really, like, stupidly, and it all falls down.
Yeah.
You know how you'd watch that
and
be really excited, and each new card going up would be exciting? For about the first four or five times.
Yeah.
And then after that, you'd start to get really annoyed that they kept coughing and it tired. That was kind of my experience of Thor.
Oh, okay.
You're getting annoyed with my micro-reviews of Thor, aren't you?
No, not at all. No,
you told me you were earlier on.
I know, but I was just being an arsehole.
Yeah, that's true. That's how it felt for me. Mm. It just felt like there was so much potential, and it tired me out.
Yeah.
They need to get movie directors to make these films. People who make fucking movies.
Yeah.
That's what they need, not Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, then I end up with someone like George Lucas, who has directed some movies.
No, but I mean good movies. You know,
he has directed two good movies.
Howard the Duck and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
He didn't direct Raiders of the Lost Ark, you wally face.
Well, then, not him. Someone else, Steven Spielberg.
He did American Graffiti and he did Star Wars.
The funny thing is, Kenneth Branagh, I remember Frankenstein as well, and Frankenstein's one of my favourite books, so I was a little bit invested in Frankenstein. Yeah. But he handled all of the bits that were from the book really, really well.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, someone felt the need to invent Hollywood-friendly bits. Yeah. Which some directors could manage, but Kenneth Branagh just doesn't. And was the same thing that happened in Thor as well.
Are you reviewing Frankenstein now?
As well, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
No, but I mean, that was another film that made me... It's obviously a through line in Kenneth Branagh's stuff, that he handles some stuff really, really well, but the edit gets fucked up, or people just don't cut stuff out of it, or... Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't work.
You finished?
And someone was blaming what they think is Marvel Studios insisting that it all exist in the same universe, but I think you can do that and it'd be so.
Oh, it's all Joe Quesada.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not him anymore, is it?
Well, I think you can add little elements like that and it not get in the way of a film being good. I don't think that was the issue with this film. I think they relied too much on the 3D. We didn't see it in 3D.
Alonso is editor in chief now, and Joe's the chief creative officer.
I'm starting to get upset again.
Don't be upset. It's just a movie, man. Let it go. Read Sigil, it'll cheer you up.
Okay.
And Jane can tell us about her lovely spotlight.
Yeah.
Oh, what am I supposed to do? Read Sigil or listen to Jane? I can't do both, James. I can't do everything. Oh, my God.
Well, I'd probably listen to Jane if I were you.
Okay, then I'll listen
you're
to Jane.
You're going to hit with a book. The way you're holding a book is like you're going to hit him. And it's a lovely hardback
stuck
book. And if you hit him on the forehead with that, you'd really feel it.
I don't
want to hit him. Oh, I'm kicking the wires, Jane. Sorry.
I don't want to hit Nick. Nick, before I start, have you done something to your face different to your facial hair?
What happened to my face? I went to a wedding. No, a couple of weeks ago, I went to a birthday party and I shaved a goatee for it, and it's just starting to grow back in now. That's
you're right
why
next to me
weird.
When I kept pointing at his face, going, "Oh, you've shaved your beard off! You shaved your beard off!" While we're waiting to pay for our coffee.
It was. You will have seen it as a goatee before,
yeah,
and you will have seen it as a full beard before. Yeah. It's possible you haven't seen it in this weird tie-dye tan line state.
I've seen it in the in-between state. I just really noticed it. And James, I don't always listen to you, sorry.
No, I don't.
It's probably for the best.
I'm not arrogant enough to think that you hang away every word, Charlie.
I know, but sometimes you just say things, and it's like when you look at your watch and then someone asks you what time is and you have to look at your watch again. Sometimes that's how it is.
Okay, thanks. You're not making me feel better.
Okay, let's talk about Casanova then.
That'd cheer me up.
Yeah. Yes, I'm going to talk about Casanova Luxuria, which is the first trade. There's two trades. The other one's Gola, I think I pronounced that right. Written by Matt Fraction and art by Gabrielle Barr.
Mm-hmm. We like the bars.
Yes.
And the moons.
And the moon did the second trade. Moon did the second trade. I was looking up very hurriedly in Wikipedia because I realised I knew nothing about the second trade.
That is the Moncast-approved research.
Thank you. It has been recently re-released in colour, which is I have been picking up in colour, but I have borrowed this and it's in its original
black and white form.
Black and white form.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah. That's weird.
It's about Casanova Quinn, who is. He's like a freelance thief and hitman and all round
adventurer, weirdo type.
Kind of out for himself. His father is the head of an organisation called Empire, who are like. This book did confuse me.
It's weird.
And it is weird. It's really weird. It confused me. Empire is. Am I right in saying that it's like a. Organisation in I'm looking at the ceiling for inspiration and sort of multi-dimensional organisation that fight not the usual things and dabble in everything but are good guys ish.
It's a little bit weird. You're kind of on your own on this one because I read the first issue of this and got really confused.
Okay, no, I don't mind being on my own. So that's my perception.
No, that sounds
of him.
About right, yeah.
And he has a twin sister called Cypher who works for Empire. Casanova doesn't work for Empire, and she's the star agent, and she gets sent on lots of the important missions. Mm. It starts off with Casanova on a job. To steal something, and he breaks into a mansion, and the owner is a robot maker, that's not right, but that's what he is, but he makes
roboticist,
he makes sex robots.
How come you manage to read this book? You don't like robots, they freak you out.
I know,
they give you the wiggins.
They're quite sexy ones, apart from when they got blown up and you see the bits and so on.
So it's okay, robots are okay as long as they're sex robots.
No.
Jane likes sexy robots.
Excellent.
No! That's what I'm saying, just the fact that they look nice and not all robotic until they're blown up and then you see
you're
the
so
robots.
Superficial when it comes to robots.
Yeah. Well, I'm allowed to be.
Robots are people too.
Yeah.
Well, they're not though, are they?
Anyways, he has to steal something, and it's this sex bot called Ruby, who is the robot. I'm going to find out the robot guy's name because this is.
Let's call him Graham.
Graham the robot guy.
Seychelles. You do it in your French accent.
What's his name? Show me.
Le Rubus Seychelles.
La Rubia Seychelles.
Thank you.
Les songes dans le arbre.
Comment t'appelles-tu? Comment t'es-il?
Mon nom est Jean-Claude. J'habite La Rochelle.
Thanks.
Et oui, le jambon.
Le jambon est dans le songe.
I don't laugh like that. That's my French laugh. Obviously.
Oh, Kukwitish. Sorry,
yeah,
Jacob.
Yeah, so he has,
you started it.
He has to steal Ruby, and the mission doesn't go right, and he ends up... oh, God, I did read this, I promise. And he
did you
ends
enjoy it?
Up, yes, I enjoyed it. Is that all I need to say? Did I enjoy
it? Yeah.
And he's infiltrated by his father's right hand man of Empire, and things go wrong, and Ruby is no more. He later then receives some bad news that his twin sister has died on a mission, and the mission she was investigating a hole in the space-time continuum, or a disturbance in the space-time continuum, and she is killed. He doesn't get on with his father, goes to the funeral, there's a bit of an outburst, and then he breaks into Empire. Well, he has passes again to Empire, but he knows they're going to be revoked after the blood of his father. And he hooks up with a nurse there. And, There's no actual sex scenes in this book, though. That's what I really love about it.
It's very sexy.
It is very sexy, but there's no sex scenes. And he's found this mysterious device in his coat pocket, and he doesn't know what it is. And he then ends up going on another mission to find... Oh, this is where he... Oh, sorry. I have read this. I promise I've read this.
That's right.
He encounters this... let me get this right. This is how this book is really weird.
It is a really mind-warping book. I've read
a couple of
issues of Casanova, and it made my brain hurt a little
bit. Yeah.
I think you're very brave.
I'm trying. Spotlighting it. Yeah. I don't know what his name is. It's a big mutant brain. Three monks that practice some form of occult zen for so long they fuse together in a wad.
Okay.
I can't find his name.
That's okay.
Let's call him Quentin.
Is it?
Muckafucker.
Fabula Berserko.
Quentin
Muckafucker. I think that's it.
Fabula
Berserko.
Fabula Berserko.
That's a cool name.
I think that's right. Or is that somebody else? I think that sounds right.
It's probably okay.
It probably is. I'm not doing very well.
No, you're doing fine.
You're just doing gangbusters, man.
Yes. It really did spin me out.
Yeah,
I was finishing off last night, and the dreams I had. And he ends up defeating... they sort of practice Zen together and stare each other out, and he ends up defeating him. And
so Casanova's awesome at Zen.
Yes, he is. He defeats him, overcomes him, and the deal is that he gets to keep his life, but they go back on it, and he ends up being shot at, falling out of a plane, where as he's falling out of the plane, he has the device he found in his hand, and he ends up in another time and place.
And that's when it gets weird.
This is when it gets weird.
Oh, shit.
Lots of things happen there. He has... His sister's alive in this time, and...
No, that's fine. Carry on. I'm just baffled.
His sister's alive in this time, in this dimension, and it turns out she was actually pretending to be his sister in the other time dimension and slipped the device into his pocket because... She in this reality she's bad, and Casanova Quinn is the golden boy of Empire. So I really can't go into too much of what's going on because, to be perfectly honest, I'm gonna have to read this about four times more before I really understand what's going on. Lots of weird stuff. You've got lots of the sex bots. You've got the three-headed monk that then gets its mind sort of personality replaced with Ruby the sex bot. There's a copy of Ruby made, put into the monk, and the monk then gets this three-headed monk. It is literally just three brains. He has no body.
You know how when someone else explains, someone else describes their acid trip?
Yeah.
And it's never quite the same as your own acid trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It may... Yeah. It's kind of a bit like that.
Yeah.
Oh, so at the end of it, do they find out that they've gone all the way to the 24-hour garage, and none of them have got any money on them?
Yeah, I think it's a bit like that.
And there's a giant robot built in the Second World War by a couple of Japanese scientists who still think the war's going on, but they have a son, and the son has bought people over the internet. It's all... Lots of really weird things happen. Casanova is out to bring his evil twin sister down. There's two other organisations within this. He wants to bring down his father and empire. There are the other two organisations. He wants to bring down. I can't remember. They've all got initials as well.
They've all got initials.
Yeah, everything's initials.
Doesn't everyone have initials?
Oh, I fucking hate acronyms.
Oh, that's
I
could never.
Oh, acronyms.
Sorry, that was my mistake.
I could never. I knew what you meant.
I've got initials. My initials are NAP.
Mine are
which is what you're going to do, because I'm stumbling through this.
You're doing fine. There has been a point, though, with such a weird book as this one, where I think it's very brave, because I would have taken several opportunities to parachute out of talking about this.
Yeah, story. Totally.
No, when I was reading it, it all made sense. But now, I'm doubting myself, the reality I'm in.
How did it make you feel?
Yeah, I was going to say, how did the book make you feel in your tummy?
What does it look like? How is the writing?
Sorry. Oh, no, it's not okay. Right, there's lots and lots of other crazy things going on. Cassandra Quinn's fighting against everyone. And there's lots of story, lots of intrigue about who his mum is and everything. Why his mum is in a certain state that she is. They find a tribe on an island that have been evolved, so they're super intelligent, and they're so intelligent they're like 4 seconds into the future than us. And it's mind blowing. Just Matt Fraction's brain. I'm sorry, I really did have a crush on it while I was reading this. I was just like, the things
on his brain.
Yes. I don't know what he looks like, so I can't be...
It's alright, it's good.
Oh, you're being superficial again.
I can't be shallow, superficial.
Love him for his brain.
Yeah.
Oh.
I love his brain, yeah.
He throws a lot of ideas at that book.
And they all work perfectly well when you're reading it. Not so much when you're telling people about it.
So it sounds like an experience.
It is an experience.
It's possible that I was responding to it at the same time as I was reading it, because I found it... I struggled to make sense of it while I was reading it.
I know, when I was reading it, it all made sense. I followed the storyline, I knew what was going on at any given time, I knew what each organisation or each person or each baddie or anyone he encountered. I understood why they were there, what they were doing, and why I was talking to them while I was reading it, but... Thinking about it now, I'm just like, none of this makes sense.
It's a bit of a fever dream. I think it's deliberately that way.
Exactly.
Though. It's kind of a.
Yeah. This story is excellent. This first trade, this first seven chapters, there's another seven chapters which I've yet to read yet, and I will be reading it. I know how crazy it sounds, but I will be reading it. It's beautifully. It's just so well written. You can't. I mean, I know it's trippy and weird, and. At some points you think you have to reread because you're not quite sure you're following it, but it's so well stitched together that it all, at the end when you finished it, it does all make sense. I've really thoroughly enjoyed it. I read it over two evenings, and it was one of the ones that I was getting to the point I was so tired I had to put it down. I would have kept reading it all night if I could. It made me feel a bit like when I was reading Transmetropolitan. It was very similar, sort of almost like the time it was set in, or the just the weirdness and all the
near dystopian future.
Exactly.
Well, they've both created he and Warren Ellis both created situations where they could basically strictly speaking anything could happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So
like in Stingray
anything can happen in the next 30 minutes.
And that's exactly what I loved about it, and Matt Fraction took that to the max. He really did make everything and anything happen, and it all made sense. You didn't question any of it. It all went together so well. Casanova Quinn is a lovable and hateable character at the same time.
Is he a dashing rogue?
He is, yeah.
He's a product of a lot of their influences as well, I think. A lot of his influences, because he's kind of like a gentleman rogue, sort of James Bond character at times, isn't he? And then other times he's more like a more sexy James Bond type character. Who's the guy in the 70s with the moustache?
James Mumb.
You weren't in the 70s with a moustache. There was a guy in the 70s with a moustache, a real dandy on British TV, and he's kind of a bit like that as well. It's very 70s feel to
a
lot.
He was a James something, wasn't he? There's and he wore a cravat.
There's a really 70s feeling to it.
There is one of the chapters of 73 feel. In fact, they have a
threesome.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Three absolutely, it's a foursome. Three absolutely stunningly beautiful women who are willing to take their clothes.
Or MFFF.
MFF or MFFF?
MFFF.
Best sort.
They're willing to take their clothes off very easily as well. And they are very much a play on Charlie's Angels. So, yeah, there's lots of references in it. It's an excellent book. Gabrielle Bazar.
You love it.
I love them so much. I love them. It's wonderful. The coloured reprints that have come out have been absolutely stunning too. But his art, especially in... Now I appreciate black and white. Even with green in it, it's just amazing. It tells a story and it just adds to the weirdness. It flows with the story so perfectly. I just couldn't imagine it looking any other way.
I think it was kind of Matt Fraction's breakout book, wasn't it? But it was also probably Barn Moon's as well.
I think you are right.
It was a little bit before it started coming out. A little bit before he started getting lots of Marvel work. So
I think it was about that time.
Sorry, I completely interrupted you with that last.
Sorry, I just lost my train of thought then. His artwork's excellent. Like, I'm really keen to see what Fabio Moon's art is gonna look like on the second part. So it should be good to see.
They do have different styles, and you don't tend to notice it until you see them. It sounds weird.
No,
but
I know what you mean. It's like
they're similar enough. That, yeah.
In Ursula, where they're switching up, and also in Details as well, where they're both working on that one, and Lux. That's one Becky Cloonan did as well.
Yeah.
You can tell the difference between their art styles.
You couldn't go on Momcast without mentioning Becky Cloonan.
Couldn't help yourself.
No. But because obviously I've. Really, since reading the Umbrella Academy, I've really fallen up with Gabrielle Barr's artwork at first, and then sort of figured out who they were and read and sort of gone through so much of their stuff that I am starting to pick out their art styles a bit better now, which I really, really like. I've evolved, yay. Yes, the book, excellent. Everyone should read it. Doesn't matter how good
how
it is.
How many decorative dog bowls would you give it out of 8?
You did this to me earlier on.
8.
You'd give it 8 decorative
eight
dog bowls out of 8.
Good. Yes.
What if you thought you were going to an MMF? An MM lowercase f.
I wouldn't be going to an MMF.
Threesome. And then it turned out.
Why lowercase f?
There's a reason.
Oh.
And then it turned out you'd read it upside down and it was a WWT. A woman, and a transsexual or a transvestite.
I think, holy shit, I've lucked in here.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened there. It's all confusing. It just occurred to me that an MMF turned upside down looks like WWF.
Oh, I see.
Or maybe you thought you were going to an MMF threesome and it turned out it was a world wrestling.
Some big muscly wrestlers getting ready to defy you. Giant pandas. They're rubbish lovers. Who wants to have sex with a giant panda?
They're really fussy as well, aren't they?
We're endangered species, but we only like this one type of food.
No, we're endangered.
There isn't a lot of it, and we have to eat a lot of it to stay alive. and we can't be bothered to have sex with
each
other.
Yeah, we're not very good at fucking, so...
But they're so cute.
They are very cute. Yeah. It seems odd that they wouldn't be drawn to each other. Maybe they feel a bit weird about having sex with each other because they're so cute.
The amount of energy they take eating and finding the food that they need in abundance that is very sparse.
What finding it? They all live in Chinese zoos and have it brought to them.
It's like...
Well, there you go. They're complacent now. They're like, can't you just take me to her? Can't you just put it in her for me?
What was that thing? I feel like that sometimes. What was that last chance to see, wasn't it, with Stephen Fry? And I forget the name of the conservationist that was with him. And he said, actually, I think in that he's frustrated that pandas are the symbol for conservation because actually they're a busted flush, you know? It's always. Fuck them, he was saying. Fuck the pandas, fuck them in their stupid heads.
They won't suck each other.
It's just one of those things, isn't it? It's just. as cute as they are, and as much as you want to, there are different types of endangered species. There's species that are naturally dying out because they aren't adapting to what's going on around them, and that's not just that's I'm not talking about mermaids. I'm talking about the actual environment.
Yeah.
Mermaids. Yeah.
How did pandas even last as long as they have? That's the real question. Yeah. Is it because we kept them alive?
Yeah, because we kept them alive, and it's just a natural. New species are being found all the time. This is just a natural. They are dying out.
We're the best. Fuck the rest.
We're not the best, James. We're just at the top.
We are the best. Look at us. What other animal has made...
I think you'll find Tyrannosaurus rex is at the top.
What other animal has made...
Tyrannosaurus rex, it's actually... There is a lot of talk of them actually being scavengers and not actual hunters. Mm. So.
What other animal has made the Nissan Micra?
And they live in the moon now, Tyrannosaurus rex.
No, that's they wild.
Driving around in Nissan Micras.
Yeah. Inside the moon. They've created a... A Dyson sphere out of the moon.
A Dyson sphere?
Yeah.
Made out of a vacuum cleaner.
It has nothing
cleaner.
To do with Hoovers. They live on the inside of the moon. They live on the inside of the moon.
No, they don't. You're full of shit. They live inside Mars.
They use their tiny little hands to develop rockets.
I've made a little rocket.
You're the one who brought the weird idea engine into the conversation.
I spent the last 15 minutes trying to work out which book I'm going to take from next shelf to read on holiday.
That shelf.
You didn't actually pay any attention to my spotlight.
No, I loved your spotlight. I was engaging. I was doing.
If you're enjoying the ideas thing, you should read Jeff. That are a bit trippy. You should read Jeff Noon. He's brilliant. Not falling out of cars.
I was actually looking
depressing.
At the Gaiman books. You got American Gods.
I've got American Gods. You can borrow it.
I don't know. I'd like to read that.
I've not read that.
I read it. It's good. The Jodi Picoults aren't mine.
Are they the ones with a slightly more feminine vibe to them?
Yeah, they're the ones that look like they're going to have like issue based stories about strong women.
Are they your friend James's who's
having,
on the pod
having like legal battles?
The owner of Pants.
Are they Big Handsome James's books?
No, they're my wife's.
Oh, your wife's books.
She reads more than I do.
Hey, why did you do that disclaimer? Because when you guys came around my flat the other night and I was saying, oh, there's some stuff on there that's Nicola's on my iPod, you're like, oh, James, there's no need to do that.
Because it's music. Music's...
Yeah, but there's some really crap stuff that I don't really want to be... I don't want people to think it's my taste. Because it might make them have a different opinion of me than the way, oh, God, I suppose it can be worse, could it? What are you guys doing this week?
I'm going to play some Total War. Amy's parents are coming down at the weekend as well. Don't know, really.
I think I'm going to play more Grand Theft Auto, and also Formula One is on this weekend.
You're on the Xbox?
Yes.
Oh.
What's your handle?
Go online. I've got you on my Xbox.
I haven't! Oh, not an Xbox.
You're not on Xbox Live, though, are you?
Yeah. No, but I did invite you.
My account expired, sorry.
I don't know if I've got an Xbox. No, I don't think I've got an Xbox Live thing. I will set it up if I'm going to play it.
Yeah, no, my account. I will. When I've got some cash, I'll redo my Xbox Live.
What are you doing, James?
I'm going on Holly Pops.
Yeah. Oh, Eurovision as well.
Yeah, Eurovision. I think you're going to come and watch that with us. We'll check with Nikki whether it's right.
If
your lovely partner Steve wants to come, we can come and make comments about the songs. But yeah, I'm going on Holly Pops with Scarlett and Nicola to Devon for a week. So I won't be here next week. It's my first week where I won't be on the pod since we've been doing
it. We'll just do your bits.
Yeah, it's easy. It's no problem. But no, I'm really excited.
That's my voice of you.
Nikki and I haven't been on holiday for ages. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's on the Dunlabre.
Yeah.
No, we're going to Devon.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Oh.
That was Ray Winston.
Oh, I have trouble doing thinking. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. I was looking at the... It's near Biddeford in Devon where we're going. I was looking at the weather forecast.
Oh, wow.
And obviously we've had, 5 weeks of unbroken sunshine. It's been glorious weather. Sunday and Monday, it's forecast for heavy rain.
And listener, a bit of trivia for you. That's actually the fourth time I've heard that.
Might have been the fifth, actually.
Oh.
I was at a posh wedding last week. I forgot to mention that. Sorry.
No, this is what we're doing next week.
No, I know, I just completely forgot, and it was a big deal.
Edit it back in, you edit this, edit it back in at the beginning.
I don't know if it's a big enough deal to do editing.
Did you have a good time?
It was good, yeah, it was better than the Raw wedding.
Good.
Oh, good, there you go.
We almost managed not to mention that, didn't we?
Well, we mentioned it derisively. okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're going to cope without you.
Oh, you'll be fine.
You're the glue that holds us together.
Oh, don't be so silly.
I was kind of hoping, I should have mentioned it before, but we would have fucked it up anyway. But I was hoping we could pretend like there was a Carl quit the band kind of moment where James threw a tantrum and
you could edit this out.
No, this, I can't be bothered.
Yeah, that would have been quite fun.
Or like you could have a Blue Peter pet has died moment. Oh, children, we've got some very sad news this week about James, the Momcast tortoise.
Yeah, but we've been there with the dead.
I'm afraid James the tortoise didn't come out of hibernation.
Aww.
Apparently one of Mabel, the Blue Peter dog, died today.
Isn't that the 15th time it's done?
The Mabel's died.
Mabel? No, I don't think so. I think Mabel's only died once.
Oh.
But wasn't it the one that was synonymous with Matt...
Goldie?
Matt Baker. What the fuck? What, the drum and bass DJ?
No, wasn't there a dog?
That was Simon Groom's dog.
I don't know.
Because John Noakes had Shep, didn't he? They had Petra. I don't remember Petra.
Petra's the one that died more than once.
I don't think so.
One of them died more than once.
Whatever. And then
I'm not sure that scientifically speaking happened.
Died, they were like, oh dear, and then they brought another dog. They look the same.
Oh, you might be right.
Do you think Shep was with John Noakes?
Shep was with John Noakes, Goldie was with Simon Groom, whom I remember was a Derby County fan.
Because they keep regenerating.
We're talking about Blue Peter now, we should probably...
I used to love Blue Peter.
You
were too young to watch it.
No, I watched Blue Peter.
It's still on.
No. Quite a strict rule about not watching Grange Hill, but watching Blue Peter. So
oh, wow.
Which theme tune were you for Grange Hill?
I don't even want to think about the new Grange.
Don't even want to think about it.
I like that.
What was yours? Were you the other one?
Yeah.
Which was Have That Go?
I can't remember.
The funny thing is, I could remember it. It was stuck in my head.
Yeah.
The newer one, until I asked you which one you were, and then I got the old one stuck in my head.
I could only think of one of the very...
That's Wilson
Judy. Was that Top of the Pops?
That's this morning,
isn't it?
We should let listener go while we're discussing.
Yeah, we'll see you. Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks' time. All doing well.
We'll see you next week, and maybe we'll have someone else on, or maybe we'll just do it ourselves. Who cares?
You can unsubscribe for a week if you like. It's fine.
Then somebody might accidentally die.
if we've had contributors, which I think we have got some contributions waiting to go in the show, you'll have listened to them already, and thank you to those people, whoever they are, for doing whatever it is they did.
Yes, thank you, people.
You can read us on momcomics.com. That's mombcomics.com. We sometimes put stuff up there.
Sometimes.
Yeah. We haven't been as prolific as we could have been. We need people to comment. Encourage us to do more.
Well, we need everyone who's got to log in to contribute something as well, really.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone needs to contribute.
Maybe they could write something about Casanova. That'd be interesting.
Maybe, yeah.
And someone, if you know Matt Fraction, please make him listen to Jane's review. See what he's done to our friend's head.
It was good. I liked it.
Yeah, so thanks to the contributors, thanks to you for listening, thanks for James for giving us a break next week.
I'll see you in a fortnight.
Yeah, have a good holiday, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye, listener.
Bye-bye.
How'd I end up in this tiny room again? With you and her and them. We know that everybody in here knows. So why'd you still pretend I should go? Though I don't want to, you're not helping, so I'm leaving. This is not how I like living. But you know I wouldn't be departing if I knew when the fun was starting. You know it's so hard for me to leave tonight. I'm pretty sure that I'm not mistaken. I think you know how my heart is breaking. And yeah, yeah, ask if I'm alright. La la la, la la la. La la la, la la la. I find myself thinking about you at kind of times when I should be busy sleeping, and then it happens again. I'm not ready for the world in the morning without you. I mess up going over all the things you've said, finding things to cling to so I don't lie here again all the night. You know I wouldn't be here not sleeping if I knew how your heart was beating. Tell me, will you be lying awake too? And there's no way I could be mistaken, so you must know how my heart is breaking. And yet I still don't. Should take your hand. Cause maybe I should be declining, but when I'm with you the sun starts shining. I know that you didn't mean to fuck me around, but all the hurt that you weren't intending, how could be the cracks amending? I guess I can forgive you now. La la la, la la la.
Jane.
Hello.
I thought you were going again. James.
Hello.
Hello. Sid James, love. Jesus. Yeah.